Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. In our current economic situation, we look to leadership for answers and solutions. This is especially true in the world of business and commerce. In Common Purpose, How Great Leaders Get Organizations to Achieve the Extraordinary, author Joel Kurtzman argues that the creation of common purpose, a new concept, is the essence of leadership. Joel Kurtzman is a senior fellow and publisher of the Milken Institute Review. Previously, he was global lead partner for thought leadership and innovation with PricewaterhouseCoopers, where he was responsible for developing new marketable ideas in strategy, technology, the capital markets, and business policy. Joel, welcome to Edgewise.
Thank you.
Well, let's go right to the heart of the matter. What is a common purpose organization?
First of all, common purpose organizations are rare. They're those organizations where people are in agreement as to the goals. They understand and have internalized the values of the organization. They're working together to achieve those values and goals. It doesn't mean they don't argue. It doesn't mean they don't have disputes about which way to go forward. They do, but they also have ways to resolve those disputes. So common purpose organizations are extremely effective, where individuals almost intuitively understand their role in the organization, what they need to do to accomplish the goals. I have seen a number of common purpose organizations, and I can tell you that it's almost as if when you walk in the front door, you sense that something is different. When you walk into Apple Computer or a little insurance company that's 175 years old, FM Global, you sense that people are helping each other, that the goals are being accomplished, that the returns and the performance is above what people expect. And you see that people like to work in those organizations, and they work hard. Common purpose organizations are difficult to create, to maintain, to sustain, and to develop. They take a lot of self-discipline, a lot of forethought. But when you have them, the results are so phenomenal that they're very easy to see.
So performance is worth the effort to create a common purpose organization?
The end result of a common purpose organization is high performance. People enjoy working in those organizations because their initiatives, their energy, their approach to life, to their jobs, to their work is not thwarted. They're not second-guessed. They're treated as people who create value. And that requires discipline, particularly amongst the leaders, to trust the people working for them in such a way that those people can accomplish their goals.
And how does this fit into the context today?
When we see the recession that we're hopefully emerging from, when we see some of the catastrophes that happened around the world, particularly in the financial sector, but in other sectors, automotives and so forth as well, we see that one of the major problems that led to these sets of issues is that people were working at odds with each other. They were pursuing their own goals as opposed to the organization's goals. And by doing so, they, in many instances, created terrible results.
For instance?
You have 100-year-old companies like General Motors who were brought down by a series over years and years of poor leadership, of top-down management, of people who would enact decrees as if they were appointed by some divine force, and expect those decrees to be turned into business plans, and over time divorcing themselves from the reality of the market, of the consumer, of the economy, of the financial system, until they have essentially gone out of business. You see other companies like Toyota in that same sector that was such a well-run company for so many years, veering away from its own common purpose into a more financially driven organization that began to value the profits and the return on investment much more than its customers, much more than its products, and much more than its people. So these are some of the problems that happen when we veer away from common purpose.
Joel, throughout the recession, companies have gone through downsizing and they've alienated their employees. That's going to be an issue companies will have to address.
Yes. Workforces have brands just the way products have brands. And people talk. There are hundreds and thousands of blogs and places on the web where you can find out every detail about every company in the world and whether or not it's a good place to work. Many companies treated people in a very cavalier manner, let them go during the downturn, hired them without thinking about their prospects for the future, wooed them, and then left them. These companies are going to suffer when the economy is strong again, people are hiring, and there's competition for talent. So the workforce brand is an important component of what a company is. And that's where the wealth is created, by the workforce, not by the leadership. The leadership keeps people in line and flying together, but it's the workforce that creates the value.
All right. How do we begin to develop common purpose organizations?
In common purpose organizations, the first thing leaders do is listen. I know it sounds trite, but in fact, listening to people is extremely important. I was with a small company I think very highly of. It's in the education sector. Its leaders are in their 30s, and the average age inside the company is probably 25. So it's youthful, high energy, it's growing like mad. The leaders of that company had to be reminded that their company with 700 employees is no longer creating value just because of what the leaders do. It's creating value because of what the 700 employees are doing on a daily basis. And if the leadership does not keep people focused on what the company stands for, that small company will cease to grow. What leaders have to understand in a common purpose organization and why they have to listen to their employees is that's who creates value after you reach a certain size. The leadership's role is to make certain that those employees continue to do that.
So what can they do?
They have to impose on themselves discipline. In many instances, the leaders of an organization, all the way up to the CEO, have to understand that their role in that organization is to get out of the way, to not do all the assignments that they themselves love, that they're even very, very good at. They have to let the people in the organization do those jobs. If they're fantastic number crunchers, they have to have the self-discipline to turn those roles over to other people so that knowledge within the organization cascades through that organization. It's not hoarded, and people everywhere in every business unit, in every division, start to understand how this company makes money, how it creates value. That's an important component of common purpose. Harvey Golub, who was the chairman and CEO of American Express, said, if everybody at American Express understood completely what the brand stood for, he could get rid of all his management books and all of his manuals of how to run the company. People would do it themselves.
In your book, you also point out the importance of having a single goal. How can you have just a single goal? There are so many priorities today.
If you think about some great companies and how they started, Steve Jobs at Apple used the word audacious. He used the word bold. You walked into Apple when it was emerging. People had posters on the walls and talked about themselves as revolutionaries. They wanted to change the world. Even at Microsoft, they talked about revolutionary activities. If a company starts in business and does not have as its goal changing the world, it's probably not going to make it. It's probably not going to attract the best people in the world. I don't think when Google was started, the founders said, we want to have a great company and make a lot of money. I think they said, we want to change the world. We want to make everybody have access to information around the world. We want to be able to track down what people need to make their lives better, to make their companies more productive and perform better. So I think you need to have big, single-minded goals of changing the world if you're going to start a company and if you're going to keep that company going with the kind of energy that you need.
Absolutely. I have a question about that. Isn't that a mission? But I think referring to it as a goal makes it more real. It makes it more exciting. Do you think that mission is a dated word?
Mission is in many ways a dated word, and many of these notions, goals, missions, sometimes even values, get confused, and we take them too lightly. When you're talking about someone's values, you're talking about what they stand for. And if you're talking about corporate values, you're talking about what hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of people should be standing for. These words are very, very important. When they get devalued, when the mission or the goal or whatever you want to call it of a company gets devalued to the point that people sometimes even don't know what those missions, goals, and values are, or even worse, they make fun of them, then the company's days are numbered. These are important things, and we gloss over them much, much too lightly.
In your book, you talk about management by walking around, and you've mentioned the importance of listening. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Leaders have to understand what people in their organizations are talking about, what they're saying to each other. People don't speak to a CEO in the most candid terms. They don't tell that CEO often the truth. There's a power relationship that has to be taken into account. One of the companies I talk about in Common Purpose is FM Global. 4,500 people work in the firm, where the CEO, the vice chairman, and others in that company in the top leadership group have a daily function of simply sitting down in the cafeteria at a different table every day just to hear what people are saying, to become approachable, to become part of the dialogue, to bring what they hear back to the boardroom. This is really important and very often overlooked.
Joel, you also talk about a culture of leadership.
You need to have people who understand each other, who have the same language. It could be in a certain organization, the language of finance. If everyone understands that language, then they can communicate. They know what they're talking about. When I was at PricewaterhouseCoopers, we did a series of global studies of companies around the world. And what we found was, unfortunately, particularly in the area of risk, companies that had global footprints would speak about risk in the United States in one way, in France in another way, in Japan or China in a third and fourth way.
And what exactly did that suggest?
They assumed they all understood what each other was talking about. But the fact is, because they were using different vocabularies and different ways both to think about risk and talk about risk, even though the words were similar, they were missing the big point. And the big point is people have to have a way to understand what the overall dimension of what they're doing is. What are the consequences of their act? That requires an honest discussion and a vocabulary that matches the magnitude of the discussion.
So let's say somebody sees the shortcomings in his organization, but he also sees the shortcomings in his own leadership style. What can he do to start changing?
First of all, there are limits to how much an individual can change. And I think we have to be cognizant of the fact that we don't have infinite potential for change. We all live within somewhat restricted areas. So we have to be realistic about ourselves. We have to understand whether or not we're a fit with the organization as well. If it's not a fit, either the organization will suffer or the leader will be rejected, or both.
So can you elaborate on that?
Yes. For example, Gil Emilia was a very good CEO, a very good numbers guy, an engineer, went into Apple and failed miserably when he tried to lead Apple. It wasn't a fit. It's not that he was a bad guy. In other organizations, he might do well. In the military, there has to be a fit between the leader and the troops. And if we don't have that fit, we can have disaster. So the leader has to realistically assess whether or not he or she fits the organization. That's the first step. Then the leader has to understand what are the powers, what are the strengths, what are the capabilities of that organization, and how can those attributes be mobilized. That's the next step. And then the leader has to remember one thing that is extremely important. They are not above the organization. They are part of the organization. Becoming CEO, for example, is not a coronation. It's a promotion. And in many instances, they have to show that to the organization symbolically. They have to turn down some of the perks to get the organization to really trust them. There's mistrust from the workforce to the CEO, and there's mistrust from the CEO down to the workforce. If we're going to bridge that, that has to be done symbolically.
All right. So what are the responsibilities of leadership?
The responsibilities of leadership are to the group, to the goal and mission. The point of an organization is it is set up to accomplish the goals that no one individual on his or her own can accomplish. So it's by definition something that involves a lot of people who are trying to work in concert, who are trying to achieve some sort of common purpose. A leader is the person who gathers what could be a disparate group of people and gets them focused in a way that they actually do accomplish those goals. So the test of leadership is whether or not something is a result of it.
Are there any further thoughts or comments on the message you're trying to relay in the book? Anything you'd like to share?
The one happy note about common purpose is that there are common purpose organizations. They do achieve extraordinary results. And one of the best things about them is people have fun working in them.
I'd like to thank our guest today, Joel Kurtzman. He is a senior fellow and publisher of the Milken Institute Review. Joel, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
The American Management Association has an international presence, adding value to your organization by involving you in a global community of peers and practitioners via one of the world's most sophisticated knowledge exchange networks. Today, AMA's global reach extends from Management Center Europe in Brussels to Management Center de Mexico in Mexico City, from the Canadian Management Center in Toronto to AMA Japan in Tokyo. And since 1995, AMA has served the Chinese market through the Asia-Pacific Management Institute in Shanghai. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.